What I had come to talk with you about was really how to engage in the board process at this point. And deadline for written comments is, you know, over, it's passed. So what a person can do, what a body can do, is to submit what's called record copies, RCs, and you can, this can be done throughout the meeting, but it can be sent now. And I have, there's actually rules involved in how to submit those. If a person is at the board meeting and they want to give the board, inform the board beyond their 3 minutes of public testimony, they can submit, he or she can submit what's called a record copy. And the rule is to provide no more than 10 pages of material. So it's fairly liberal amount. This is intended to inform the board. And it could be, so, 5 double-sided pages or 10 single-sided pages. And that can be done throughout the meeting. And then once we're in deliberations, we still do allow the public to provide information, but we get we narrow that down to 5 pages, 2.5 double-sided pages, just because at that point the board members have to have the time to read, and, you know, wading through a lot of that. It's a very, I think, democratic process and user-friendly, you know, public-friendly process. So the intent, of course, is to make sure that we are getting relevant information. As far as attending the board meetings, you sign up at, you know, before there's a deadline. If you want to be on the list to testify, you put your name in, and it's in the order of your name being given. And you have 3 minutes of at the, you know, to address the board. There's also a process called committee process, where the committees, and right now we have, I think, 4 committee of the whole, and they're grouped into a certain, you group the proposals into individual committees, and this might be irrelevant, actually, because the matter is not a proposal, so I'm not going to weigh you down with that. I'm happy to come later if there's a, you know, something like that needs to be addressed. So anyway, I think written material is what you're going to be concerned about, or making public comments, public testimony, and it's appropriate to make public testimony on issues that are not on the agenda as a proposal. So that is something anybody can do here. And as far as record copies, like I said, you submit those if you are in person, but there's also a fax number that you can fax your written information to, and I can give that to you now.
You can give that to the clerk.
Okay, I'll give it to the clerk and she can. Okay. So what I'm trying to stress is it's not too late. You can, you know, get your, you know, comments together and submit them anytime during the meeting. And the fact that this genetic study presentation is going to be done during the report, but the board won't take it up until miscellaneous business at the end of the meeting, as Heather said, it gives you time. So there's that.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. With the public comments, does there seem to be any bias towards somebody showing up in person and speaking against somebody submitting written comments? So in other words, is it better to actually be there in person? Does that have more of an impact than submitting written comments?
Well, you can put yourself in our position. Wouldn't you say it's better to actually have somebody speak to you?
Yes, definitely. Yeah.
And you can put in a written comment. And then it gives you opportunity, too, to speak to the board members while you're at the meeting. We take breaks on a regular basis, at least 4 times, well, lunch, but then there's usually mid-break, too. So yes, it is better to attend.
So, Ms. Jeffrey, while we were on the break, I had a question for you. And so one of the better outcomes from this Board of Fish meeting might be to form a work group to get into this discussion of this matter. And so when you have work groups, who might be on that work group?
Well, there's usually, there's no rules, but there's usually two members of the Board of Fish mm-hmm. on the work group, and then members of the public to get a broad, you know, a representation of the interested parties on, and but there's no rule about the size particularly. But of course, the goal is to inform the board
right.
to make the best decision possible
and so,
give the time.
I'm sorry. And so the board would collect names and do that outreach for selecting people to be on a certain work group.
That's right. It won't. Wouldn't anticipate that it would happen right there, you know.
Right. It would go on from there, but I was interested mm-hmm. in the process to make sure
submit
that we had some Kodiak representation.
Absolutely.
And maybe, you know, load that work group if it was possible, because that's what we're up against at this point.
Yeah.
Would there be an opportunity for call-in comments? And then I have a follow-up question, too.
Oh, call-in during the meeting?
Mm-hmm.
No.
Will you have to recuse yourself from any discussions or debates on this issue because of your situation as a commercial fisherman here?
I was just asked that. I always consult with the Department of Law just to make sure. My sense now is that I wouldn't, because it is not a, first of all, it would need to be a proposal of some, it would be taking a direct action, and what we would be discussing is what to do next. It's not saying we are going to address this proposal and, you know, that, you know, wants to cut Kodiak off the, you know, off at its knees. And even then, I'm not sure, because it's a, and the wording is, you know, I think significant financial gain, I think is usually how it's worded, or loss, I would think. But I don't know if that would connect me directly. So on this point of where we're at now is what we're going to do, what the board is going to do in response to this genetic study, I feel. But I certainly will ask the question, but I believe I can participate in that decision. There were so many other comments that I felt that I would like to speak to just inform the public about, and you all about what the board has as far as policies that will guide them in making, you know, any kind of management plan changes, and also what can possibly happen, you know, to ask the board to act, you know, sooner than later. I don't know. Do you want me to just wing it here? Okay. Okay. First of all, I just hear rumors, but there has not been an emergency petition submitted on behalf of Cook Inlet fishermen. But I've heard that that is something that is, you know, rumored about. And so I want you to know that there is policy in place about how to deal with emergency petitions. First of all, if it is the board would need to decide if the criteria is met for an emergency petition, and that would be that usually a conservation concern involved. And it would be also that there is no other means to address it other than having a board meeting to address it. And usually this is an issue, and it's very, very rarely done, that if there, you know, if we did not, you know, close this fishery in the middle of the season, then, you know, there's going to be, you know, dire consequences down the road, conservation. So that is a tool that is very rarely used. And I'm not going to suppose what the board would say, but you probably can understand that. Also, emergency petition, you would, if it was found that there was an emergency, we would be able to take it up at a further meeting. There would not be any action taken at this meeting. As far as another avenue, another tool that the board can use if there's not a proposal in place on the agenda, is to do what's called a board-generated proposal, and that is there's criteria for that. Because this is, you know, taking it out of the the normal proposal process and having the board, you know, decide. In fact, we did that recently with the crab issue and Tanner crab issue in the Bering Sea, because it's, you know, it met the criteria of urgency. So there's four criteria for board generated proposal. One is it in the public's best interest? Well, of course, the public that wants us to take something like this up would argue that would be the case, but that would be the board to decide. Is there urgency considering this? Is this having to do with basically conservation concerns? Are there current processes insufficient to bring it to the board's attention otherwise? And then will there be a reasonable opportunity for public comment? So I think it would be we could be asked to do this, but I think it would be highly out of the ordinary, and I did talk with Department of Law about this, and to, you know, come up with a board-generated proposal and take action on that would be highly irregular and would certainly raise red flags, and I don't think would, you know, be in the public's best interest, certainly for Kodiak. So
I have a quick question, if I can, to add on to that. So since we've heard so far from the managers, the area managers, that at least this three-year study hasn't shown anything that would provide management with a better way to manage. So if there were any proposal that came forward, it really would have to be based on an allocative issue.
That's
or
right.
Need. So how does the Board of Fish deal with allocative issues when there's no overwhelming management data behind that?
That's an excellent question, and of course that is what we love to do. No, that is our job, actually, because, I mean, of course, ensuring conservation is the top priority for, you know, everybody in this room. But then after that, if there's a surplus, what do you do? And who gets it? And there's criteria involved. And one of them, and there's eight criteria, and I'm sorry I didn't bring that list. I don't know if Heather has them, but I can happily, actually, that would be good for me to do that, forward that document to you. And it's listed. And it's one is the history of the fishery is one of the, you know, important ones, and I could go on, but anyway, there is criteria. There's also in changing a management plan such as this, there's mixed stock fishery policy that guides us, and this is recognizing that's actually in regulation, and this recognizes that it's not like, you know, there's, you know, certain fish belong to certain regions. It's, you know, it's not like we, you know, brand our fish. Fish swim everywhere. And so, and that recognizes that there are traditional harvest of fish that are, it's Alaska's fish, basically. And they are, you know, bound, you know, for certain regions, but they have been swimming through these waters for, you know, eons, or, you know, since forever. So that those are the kinds of policies and criteria that inform the board.
I have a quick follow-up then, Pat. So how much weight is applied, if any, between historical fisheries and new and emerging fisheries?
Well, that would be something, you know, in the individual boards would, you know, have a good discussion about that. I don't want to get too far into the weeds about that. I did mention history as being an important factor. Expanding fisheries, that is, you know, another criteria that's considered in mixed stock fishery policy as well. So it's, you know, there's some subjectivity to it. It's sharing our, you know, abundant resource with user groups, and it's, you know, they're fully allocated already. And so, you know, where do you, you know, you really need to be thoughtful about what makes, you know, why you would want to change something. As was said earlier, the management plans for Kodiak for sure have been in place for, you know, decades, and they've been working, and that is a fine tuning. It's been so interesting. You know, you allow a little bit more pink fishing over here, but then we have to be concerned, you know, about, you know, some other, you know, sockeye runs or whatever, and it's just this fine tuning, and there's weather and, you know, run strength and all kinds of things to consider. And so I would say, I guess I am answering the question, the history of a management plan does certainly speak to stability, and so a lot of thought has to go into it. And this is for any region throughout the state, not just Kodiak, of course. I'm speaking in general terms here. And so you really, you know, there's a lot of policy and criteria involved and thought to tweak things.
Thanks. Pat, you had a question?
So when is the next Board of Fisheries meeting? And knowing that, you know, we don't know what's going to be the outcome of this particular one, but we do know the dates. When's the next one?
After Upper Cook Inlet meeting. Okay, so this one is the 23rd through the
March 8th.
8th, and right. Then the following one is the 24th.
Of March?
Yes.
Oh, my goodness.
Yes.
And how long is that set for?
through the 27th, I believe.
So oh, no, a shorter
I'm sorry.
Meeting.
No, wait. It's the 20th through the 24th. I'm sorry.
20th through the 24th.
I'm thinking about my hockey tournament.
Well, of course. And so I just wanted to have some kind of understanding of the timing in between. That's not a lot of time in between the meetings.
That's right. Yeah, okay. It is 20th through the 24th. Is that right, Heather? it all does kind of run together right there to the end.
Uh-huh. I had a question.
Yep.
Yeah, just a very quick historical question. Could you speak to some of the history of the Cook Inlet Drift Association and the Kenai River Sport Fishing Association and their previous interactions with the Board of Fish?
Well, there's always proposals from individuals of those groups at the Board of Fish meetings. I don't know. And that's true here. I'm sorry, you said the Sport Fishing Association. Actually, there's a couple of them.
The Kenai River Sport Fishing Association.
Right. Okay. Yep. Mm-hmm. CRISA, we call them.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yep. They're active, and they have, you know, a lot of representation there. They have professionals that represent them as well as individuals. And did you say the Drift Association?
Yes,
okay,
did.
That would be UCDA, we call mm-hmm. them. Yep, United Cook Inlet Drift Association. Yep, they're well informed and experienced at, you know, coming before the board.
Thank you.
So one of the things that Mr. May brought up was having an understanding of those different groups in that area and what their own issues are. And so I don't know if you can speak to that, but direct us on how we can find out about that. I think that would be advantageous for us to understand.
Oh, you're talking about the various user groups in Upper Cook Inlet and...
Right.
Okay. And there's also a Kenai... let's see, what's the acronym? Anyway, it's a fishing, you know, another commercial fishing group. The question is,
as Mr. May brought up earlier, is having an understanding of what's going on between those groups in that area so that we would know that and have an understanding of that. Where would we go to find out that information?
Well, one of the ways to do it, I'm sure they might have websites, but, I mean, they submit proposals, and they have, you know, all of the user groups have proposals that are asking the board to change regulations in some, you know, fashion. And I don't know, is there 170 some proposals? I don't, okay. And so that would be a way to find out about them, you know, about their issues. You mean their current issues? Is that what you're looking for?
Right. Mm-hmm. Understanding the storm between those groups might give us a better just, you know, I mean, we're on the defense here. So as much information as we can get would be to our advantage.
Yeah. Well, basically you're talking about the players and how they interact and what their, well, I mean.
Yeah, what their disagreements are.
Okay. Well, this, you know, the Kenai River Sports Fishermen's Association, one of the main concerns is king salmon, you know, the Chinook runs. And so that is what is usually kind of the concern of, and when they're asking the board to make regulation changes, it's usually conservation of conservation or sockeye. You know, the personal use fishery has grown, as was referenced. This is no secret. And, you know, I think since the early 90s, it's grown substantially. You know, basically the road system likes to get down to the mouth of the Kenai River and dip net and get, you know, the personal use fish that all Alaskans are entitled to, are, you know, sharing the resource. And so that's another user group that certainly would like to, you know, participate and ensure access to the sockeye salmon. And it's very popular. And I've, you know, heard it's a lot of fun. I would probably try it too if I weren't fishing. So, yeah, it's when you think about it, it's like this, you know, I mean, it's this long, narrow, you know, body of water, or relatively narrow, and it's all, I mean, it's the road system, it's this, you know, huge, you know, return of fish into this region that goes up into the, you know, the Susitna River and beyond. It's, and so, of course, it reminds me of, I don't know, like seagulls on the water, you know, getting the scraps all, you know, converging. We're just all, you know, together trying to get our share of the fish. And so there's competition. And so it's contentious. It's understandable. And I usually, I mean, I don't ever, I mean, it's their right to advocate for, you know, for their access to the common resource. So, and it's, sure, it's lively.
Okay, Kyle has a question.
Yep.
So is this area unique somewhat because of the Ninth Circuit Court's decisions on requiring the state to manage the requirements of the federal plan? And if so, I see that there are requirements of the federal plan that that take into consideration the historical fisheries and some of these other things and the economic impact to communities. And is that...
You know, you're reminding by using the term economic impact. We do talk about in part of our allocation criteria is the, you know, economic dependence of the communities, you know, related to the fishery. So that's part of what the board does consider too. It's the historic dependence. So, but in answer to your question about the federal management, that is not in place now. There, as Heather might be able to inform you better with that. That's breaking news. It just has happened, and so perhaps I defer to Heather about that.
Mr. Chairman, I spoke to it earlier with Matt's question, and. Yeah, the FMP process is a long one, but most people expect that the state management will continue as it is now while that FMP is being developed. Most people also expect that the FMP at the end of that process will look very much like the current management program. I don't think we're looking at massive changes anytime soon, or probably even in the next 4 or 5 years.
I think maybe the federal... Sorry for not going through the chair there, John. If I might answer. yeah, the state has been managing this region for, you know, since statehood, so it's not surprising that it might, but I don't want to get ahead of it. There is a process, so. Let's see if, do you mind if I just briefly look at my notes, see if I might want to add anything here?
Well, while you're looking it up, just a question, because ultimately we're looking to determine if there's information or enough information for us to respond in some fashion or to be proactive enough to address the board. So you know, the challenge we have is today's the 16th and you meet next week. And, you know, we typically move very slowly in these organizations because we have to get permission from everybody before we can send a letter out. So we have a very limited time frame. But would it be reasonable in this particular case, knowing that it's not a proposal but it's just a study that's going to be presented, to get a letter stating our position on this? Is that reasonable to do that at this time, given our time frame that we have just as elected bodies? Is that a reasonable response?
I would think, yeah, I think a reasonable response, well, first of all, as far as the timing, the meeting starts on the 23rd, but it won't come up for discussion until miscellaneous business, and it might be advantageous to submit something towards the end so that it's, you know, fresh is one way to do it. Or you can submit more than one RC, you know. Okay, so as far as what a person can say, that you want to be, you know, the community wants to be actively involved and even use your own criteria from, you know, that you have in place of why you need to be involved. You know, the same criteria you've used, or I don't know if you use the word criteria, but... you need to be at the table, basically.
What we're referring to, and perhaps some of the folks who haven't normally attended our fisheries work group meeting are maybe not even aware, but the City Borough commissioned an economic study of the benefits of the seafood industry, and we've got for the McDowell Group, so we've got actually a really good detailed report that just tells the impact of all the different fisheries, so that we can actually have some pretty good statistics that would help us in building this letter.
Mm-hmm.
And as Ms. Jeffrey was saying, so this will come in handy, the study in our defense, as we point to the economic basis of our community, which I think are similar words that you used, along with historical runs. I mean, we have to put together a strategy for our defense. That's what we have to do for our community. So this will be good, along with I'm interested in getting copies of the criteria that you mentioned, and you gave that to the clerk, is that correct?
Okay.
So we can have that, because that's what we have to layer this and put it together with a strategy, at least initially, before the board. So that's
right.
Part of it.
And this is something I just want to be clear. I don't want to be, you know, get out ahead and be advocate for... It's difficult, of course, but this is something that is available to everyone to, you know, the allocation criteria, the, you know, all of those are just policies that the board typically refers to. And I would just look to other members in the community to help you with, you know, who have had history in this particular issue. Yes.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. The allocation criteria for the board, is that what's in the Alaska Statutes Title 16 under Board of Fisheries?
Possibly.
Is that included in there?
Heather, do you know?
Yes, I can't make the internet work in here, but the easier way to do it is to go to the Board of Fish webpage, start there, and they hand out at every meeting a list of policies that they refer to, and it's in that list. I can show you exactly how to get to it.
Thank you, because the one that I found, it starts with number one, the history of each personal use sport, guided sport, and commercial fishery. Number two, the number of residents and non-residents who have participated in each fishery. Does that sound correct? Okay, thank you.
All right, so if you don't mind, I'm going to do the same. I'd like to ask the same thing. Is anybody from the... audience that has specific questions to this issue, I'd like to ask Ms. Jeffrey, please come up, state your name, and sign in one more time. If you put the mic on there, Raymond, thanks.
Raymond May, Ms. Jeffries, this work group that I hear talked about could come out of this next board meeting. Who would set criteria? Because we can load the board one way or the other, this work group. We can load it one way or the other, committee, say that we're hearing from, it sounded like you said maybe the legal department, who would set criteria for designated seats on there? Would that be the Board of Fish chairman? Would that be the chairman of the committee? And then where would we stop? Are we going to have 100 people on the committee? You said there's no criteria. So on this one, I'm thinking there's probably going to be some criteria met just so there isn't 100 people on this committee. And then the other part to that would be, I believe you are getting off the Board of Fish in June. Is that correct? Where would your position be, knowing that these committees, the last one that I was involved with you on took about a year, would you still participate in that committee as a board member, or would you opt out of that? I'm just trying to put things in perspective.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I'll just go through. Ray, I don't think I would be able to participate as a board member when my term is up. I think the line is pretty bright there. As far as the size, the board has done this in the past few times, and I think that it'll probably be the chair, and then there's co-chairs, and so it'd be the co-chairs, two individuals from the board, and then the chair of the board, I believe, would make the decision on balancing the representation from all of the players on such a work group. Now, I don't want to get too far ahead. The board has not decided that there would be a work group. That would be something that, the public would need to convince enough board members to go forward with that. I know that you've been at you were at that last board meeting, and they did decide to, not react right then and set up something. So let's see, what else did you ask? Oh, I think that the board is experienced enough, the members of the board and people involved in the board process knows that, you want to keep the number of members on such a committee or work group, as small as possible, really, making sure that there's enough representation from the different user groups. But, if you get it too big, usually there's a, board member, or I should say a committee member, and then there's the alternate assigned so that, they can for sure have constant representation from that user group. Does that answer your question?
Yes, to an extent. I just recall the last committee that I was on with you, it seemed like every meeting we were adding members to the committee, and as I think of things coming together, if a work group or committee is formed, we can end up with a representative from the city, the borough, probably multiple cities around the island, multiple cities in Cook Inlet. I'm just thinking about how large it can get after the last experience I had. So as I'm putting things together, looking into the future.
That's a good point, and I do appreciate that. I could probably allay your fears. That Pollock work group was such a new concept, and so all of a sudden there's all these different user groups, and it sounds like Kodiak has been, we've been here before, with this particular issue, and so I'm hoping that everybody will agree with your concerns and not want to get it too large. That's all I can say.
Oliver?
Yeah, Oliver Holm. In 1989, when the Cook Inlet interception issue first came before the Board of Fisheries, I was the Kodiak Fishing Game Advisory Committee chair, and it's right in the middle of that. And but then it carried over for several board cycles, and I guess this situation is a little different, because when I was put on the committee by the board and dealt with negotiations with two board members and Cook Inlet participants, because we were actually starting from competing proposals that had been before the board, and at this point there are no proposals. It's not in the cycle. The board could appoint a committee, but I guess it would be pretty problematic for them to appoint Kodiak participants on the committee at the end of a Cook Inlet board meeting, you know, we're not all going to be up at a Cook Inlet meeting. That's not going to happen. And there is no proposal. I guess the board could say, well, go negotiate something. But that would be before there's even a discussion of whether it met the criteria to actually come before the board out of cycle. So it would be kind of an aberration in the process. It could happen, but it wouldn't be a normal thing. What would be more normal to the board process is if they looked at it as a petition later in the October meeting, see if it meets the criteria to come up out of cycle or not, and then proceed from that, set a date for it to be seen and have, maybe then they would have a committee, but it would be odd to just form a committee, say, so, okay, thrash us out, you know, and the idea that when there are no concrete proposals put in, that you'd have concrete proposals for, say, the last meeting of the year in March, that would be highly irregular. I guess it could happen, but it's not. So I guess my feeling is at this point that, you know, that we have to be project the idea that, you know, we are prepared for this. It's really important to the community and the fishermen in this area. But if there's a committee, we have to figure out how we're going to participate. But it's a pretty problematic to just think that they're going to jump right into this at the end of the Cook Inlet meeting. It could happen, but it's Sue would have some opinions, maybe, but that's my take on it.
The problem is that there's, yeah, I mean, I hear what you're saying, and there's seven board members, and so I guess that would be, anyway, points well taken.
Your time wasn't up, by the way.
Tim Gossett. Oliver kind of said what I wanted to say, Sue. Is there any reason that we wouldn't want to go up there and be contentious? I mean, I realize it's out of cycle. I realize the importance of being there the first day, the last part of the meeting. But it would seem like we wouldn't... let me back up. No, I don't mean to say not be there at all, but if a bunch of us go up there all contentious, do we run the risk of, you know, ticking the board off and kind of putting a bad taste in their mouth? Or, I don't know, can you speak to that at all? Is it?
Of course, I'm biased. You guys are all so well-spoken, but no. Seriously, As long as individuals are respectful and knowledgeable, I personally don't think that that's a problem, you know, for a number of people to go up. I mean, I understand what you're saying. You don't want to go up, you know, kind of fighting something that's not even, you know, a proposal at this point. You're just speaking for yourself and your concerns, but in a respectful way, I don't see that as begging for a fight or setting the board, you know, teeth on. It just all depends on your presentation, and maybe. Anyway, that's all I can say on that.
If I can, maybe at the end, could I say something, or can I go ahead and say it now? You said something about the possibility for public.
We're going to have public comment at the end, so if you want, just hold on to that.
Thanks.
Okay. Okay, I think that's it, Sue. Do you have anything else?
Thanks.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for being here. Really appreciate it, and I think it's added a lot to our process, so thank you. To ask the members at this point, because we are running late in the day and there's a lot of information here, how would you like to proceed with what we've heard so far before we get into public comment?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would definitely like to explore the options and the possibilities of drafting a letter, hopefully a joint letter between the borough and the city that we could submit as an RC, because some of the comments that we've been hearing today, such as nothing in the results will change how we're managing the fisheries, it's corroborated by what we were already doing. It's really clear to me that this genetic study probably shouldn't be used as anything more than informative at this point, certainly not used for allocative stuff and definitely not used to try to pit our local commercial fisheries against sport fishing up on the Kenai. So that's what I would propose. Thank you.
Okay, so just looking at time frames and just understanding our processes, many of us will be in Juneau next week at the AML meeting. And we should be done by then next week. So that still gives us time to get something up and RC up to the Board of Fish. So what I would suggest, and if I'm looking for volunteers, is maybe a couple folks with Heather to help draft that, taking all the key points we've heard today, rather than try to put it together here in the public, which would be a really difficult process. But I was hoping you would volunteer. I was really looking at you for that. And if you didn't raise your hand to volunteer, I just volunteered you. So, but I would like to see that, and then we should be back from AML by the end of next week, which would give us time to post. We could actually hold another meeting the first part of March, right, or the end of February. It gives us time for the clerks to publish another meeting notice. We could come back and discuss that and still have time to get that letter out. Does that sound reasonable? Pat? Kyle, any?
I agree with Matt.
Okay. Okay, good. That was easier than I expected. Oh, I'm sorry, Pat.
Well, I think we need to talk more about, and maybe we'll do that at the March meeting when this letter is drafted. And, you know, being the editor that I am, I'd certainly like to look at that, because I do think we need a strategy and bullet points in this letter as a start. But I also think we need to talk about having some Kodiak representation from this fisheries work group at that meeting. I think it's most important that we're there. As Ms. Jeffrey and we all know, and sitting up here, is that when you have people before the board and testifying and to follow that, it makes a difference. And I think this is such an important issue that we need to have at least one member from the fisheries work group at that meeting.
No, I certainly agree with that. And my assumption would be that we would hand carry that letter up and present that. So we'd have that in person. So I think just really it comes down to the details. And, you know, if you would prefer, Matt, at this point to go over some of the high points, or just do you feel confident what we've heard today that you, between you and Heather, that you can draft the bullet points we would need?
Yeah, I'll go back and listen to the audio of this, too, and work with Heather. And, of course, any of you in the audience and listening on KMXT, my contact information is on the borough website. So if you've got any other information or ideas, please send them my direction.
Okay. Well, that does bring us back up to public comment. So if we have any public comment, now would be the time. Please come forward 3 minutes. Once again, state your name for the record. And if you wouldn't mind signing in again, please do that.
You are listening to KMXT Kodiak.
Excuse me, Nick Sigalkin, Fish and Game. As I was sitting here listening, I thought of a few resources that might help the group that I thought I'd let you know, and as well as the audience that's listening. A couple people mentioned the Board of Fisheries website. It's pretty easy to find, and I find it relatively easy to navigate. So if you just go to the Alaska Board of Fisheries, and then if you go, you can go in and look by meeting. So if you go to the Kodiak meeting, it'll list all the information that was presented there. So the genetics report, the actual report, the link to it is there, as well as a PDF of the presentation. So there's a couple things to look at. A couple regulations I kind of looked up while I was listening to other people that you might pay attention to. 5 AAC 39220. That's the policy for the management of mixed stock salmon fisheries. Another one is a little longer, but it's worth looking at, is in a state statute. It's 1605251. This is the regulation for Board of Fisheries. And then actually, if you go kind of go down through it, it looks like 17E, it talks about how the Board of Fisheries allocates resources. This might be what Mr. Van Dale was referencing. I guess the last thing that I'd mention is a few of you were asking about kind of the issues and understanding the interaction between the user groups up in Cook Inlet. Really the best source of information that I could think of to kind of condense that down, because there's a lot going on, is a staff biologist, Pat Shields. Now, he's going to be swamped probably the next 4 weeks or 3 weeks at least, preparing for the Board of Fish and then involved in the Board of Fisheries. But if you get to him right away in helping you draft a letter, you could give him a call. Or after the board meeting, if you wanted him to be on the phone like we had Chris here for another follow-up meeting, he's been working up there for years. He understands it really well, and he'd be a good resource for you guys to understand. That's all I had.
Good morning. Jeff Stephen, United Fishermen's Marketing Association. I wanted to thank Susan Jeffrey and Nick Segalkin and James Jackson and Chris Habich for participating here, because it was obvious they presented a tremendous amount of really valuable information that I think helped guide your vision and direction on how you're going to deal with this. And so I really appreciate the fact that those folks came down. They didn't have to, and it was very nice that they did. I'm in the midst of finishing a letter to the board. Some of the issues that we're going to bring out have had several hours of conversations in the last couple of weeks with a whole myriad of folks from Fish and Game and other places on this. But there's a technical issue of the fact that those prior studies that have been done, the WASIP and the genetic study, really weren't designed to address an issue like this. And so we're going to argue that if they decide they really do want to get into this, that first of all, they should clearly delineate the objectives that they're trying to achieve, the problems they're trying to explain, the issues that are there. And we understand it's interception and such, but there's a lot of other things around that. And that they design a sampling program, genetics program, all of the different things that they have at their disposal that will get to that clearly agreed to and delineated set of issues that need to be addressed and upon which they hope to make some kind of a decision. And that they should probably illustrate the kinds of decisions they might be making to address those problems that would help them design the study. But it's really very unprofessional, I think, for the board to go for, and I'm not saying that they're doing this, because I find that this is a very reasonable board. I'm very impressed with them. But I think it would be unreasonable for them to just use what's there to go forward. I would not underestimate the impact of the management plan, the FMP. I'm not saying it's going to directly influence this, but, you know, USITA was really big behind that. And USITA is, they're trying to survive because they have this increasing personal use fishery, which is a problem. These are the things that have to be looked at. You know, what are some of the problems there? Do they have an escapement problem? As far as I've looked very carefully in the last several weeks, I don't see any escapement problems. In fact, there are some. In fact, I think it was referenced, there may be some over-escapement. There may be some. Susitna has a problem, a little bit of a problem. Big problem. It's defined differently. But and there's an increasing personal use fishery that's been established there in the last several years, and that's having tremendous impact. So you see this, you know, they're feeling the crunch. But, well, okay, that's it, right? At 3 minutes? Yeah, all right.
Wrap it up. Please. Go ahead. Give a couple
seconds. Well, so anyway, so I guess, and to give you an idea, just, or I'll be very brief, to give you an idea of what we might be up against there is if you look, it was just a few days ago, Judge Johnstone, who used to be the chairman of the Board of Fish, wrote an article that was very, you know, not very complimentary to commercial fishing. And Catherine Cassidy wrote a very good rebuttal, you might call it, here just a few days ago. She's a set netter from up there, and I thought she did a very good job. But so I just, you know, that kind of maybe almost sets the outline of the situation we're in. And so I just, there's just a lot of things. But I appreciate the fact that you folks are involved, and, you know, the, so that's it.
Okay, thanks, Jeff.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. Any other public comment?
Tim Gossett. Yeah, I'm just scribbling away, so I don't know. We need...
Okay. Thank
you. I really didn't want to speak anyway.
You can come back to the next meeting.
I just thank you guys, and wanted to point out, we already all know this, we need help. The fishermen need help. We don't, you know, we're a big part of the community. We don't have the opportunities we used to. The money that we generate has a huge trickle-down effect here. I've been helping recently to digitize the massive amount of paperwork generated during the early and mid-90s. By us fishermen, of course, the salmon work group, letters, petitions, affidavits. It's impressive. It's take my hat off to Chris and Bruce and, you know, everybody that was involved back then. Astrid spoke of, read a letter from her husband, Nate Rose. We chose Nate to represent us. I'm saying us as a group of saners so far. We're talking amongst ourselves that we're going to, there'll be different levels, you know. I mean, hopefully, eventually, not only crew members, but maybe set netters and different associates within this this group. We've met the past three weekends in a row. This Saturday will be the fourth. So far, we've been involved more with, you know, bylaws and setting it up properly. We've retained an attorney. So we're trying to organize, but we really do need help. And in some of this, like I say, going back and looking through what the paperwork was generated in the 90s, I can't help but stop and read occasionally. I've got a lot of, John said something about bullet points that I'd like to, you know, share maybe later with you guys and whatnot, things that I've pulled out that are just, you know, awesome criteria and whatnot that we can use to help ourselves going forward in the future. But anyway, yeah, that's all I have for now. But thanks again for having us.
Well, thank you, Tim. And, you know, as a work group, I'll just say this, is we don't operate well in a vacuum. So please keep us advised. Please keep us informed as you guys continue to move forward. And you can do that through the clerk's office or contact any of us directly. Thank you.
Chris Burns. There's a yellow binder of the old borough resolution that was done in 94. Like I said, canneries. There's lots of letters. I mean, it's an outline of what the community put forward. Then it would be worth looking at to craft whatever you decide to craft now. But it's that was the main reason I came, is to bring that in. I don't see that we need to reinvent the wheel, because this is basically, it's almost deja vu. But the genetic study is the only thing different besides, you know, average weight and time of harvest. So, okay, that's all I had to say. Thanks.
Thanks, Chris.
Alexis Kwatchka, you know, I was an advocate for the formation of this group, and I just want to take the time to say that this is exactly the vision that I saw in the future, and I really think that it's critical that we maintain the course and stay the course of what's going on. It's an incredible time sink, money sink, and I think policy and regulatory changes are happening at such a rapid rate that you guys have to be abreast, and I can encourage you to stay the course and continue on.
Could you sign in, please, Mr. Kwatchka? Thank you.
Hi, Al Crady. I thank you guys for letting us come here and talk to you and support you guys being with us. I just want to let you know that Old Harbor's got its fisheries work group, and it's run by the Old Harbor Native Corporation, as of Uzinki, and Duncan works for us, so... You know, we'd like to be in the process, too. Thank you.
And, Alf, if you can, I would just ask if you are, if you, your groups are meeting, if Zinke and Old Harbor are meeting, if it's possible either to get us a link to your website or forward any minutes or notes, if you care to share those to the clerk, so we can stay abreast of what your issues are.
Roger, and I appreciate the same from you guys, too.
It's on the website, both the city and the borough website.
Okay, thank you.
The minute's always on it. Anybody else? Okay, next up would be work group closing comments. Start with Kyle over there.
I want to thank everybody for being here, and I want to thank the work group for digging in on this. It's a lot of time-consuming stuff. It's been a heavy lift with this North Pacific Fisheries Management Action in the Gulf of Alaska over the last year, and now we can focus on some of these other things. I'm glad we have that opportunity, especially it's kind of timely right now with this gathering cloud on the horizon. And we had a joint work session last night with the city and borough, and one of the things I recommended was that we work towards providing a good user-friendly website for these kinds of issues that are fisheries-related issues. We do have, the city has a website that presents information on fisheries work group minutes, and so does the borough in our packets, but it's a little difficult to find, and so I've asked our staff if they could kind of tweak that website a little bit to make it a little bit more user-friendly and provide information and an opportunity for you guys to submit comments and relevant information. And thank you.
Heather, you want to go ahead? Want to come then? Okay. Pat.
Well, thanks for coming out today and speaking. I think this has been a real learning experience and a good public comment, and I like this format. Especially on this issue, I would hope that we would weave in this format with our fisheries work group meetings in the future as well. And I want to thank Matt for volunteering, although he may not have volunteered, to write that letter and with input from people. And I'd be happy to edit it, but I know that in information I've received from him before that he does an excellent job. So thank you for that and for chairing and for Heather being here. And it looks like we, you know, I like putting together defense strategies, and it certainly seems like we have our work cut out for us, but I think we have some foundations to go by, and so I'm happy to help in any way.
Thank you. Matt?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, I want to specifically thank KMXT, too. So KMXT, in case you're listening, thanks for cutting into your normal programming and letting us have a midday talk show for you. And also everyone who's here in the room, thanks for showing up and participating. That's really great to see. I'm so happy to have you participate. And to Mayor Branson's comments, to be forewarned is to be forearmed, and this is definitely going to be a pretty major issue coming up, because just a very quick read of some of these Cook Inlet associations on their websites. Some of the statements they've made include, during the past decade, the economic values of sport and personal use salmon fisheries in Upper Cook Inlet have greatly surpassed those of commercial salmon fisheries by every available measure. And state fisheries management systems are designed primarily to accommodate commercial fisheries. And this is concerning to me, but seeing all of you in this room right now and hearing your comments, I think that we've got a pretty strong and solid footing so that if we, when we formulate our strategy and go forward, I think we're going to be okay because we're all in this together. And it's going to be a tough fight, but we can get there. And one final comment, too. In a future meeting, I would like to try to get representatives of Northern Edge to come and speak to us because that's another ongoing issue with the military exercises. That's all I have today. Thank you.
Thanks, Matt. Well, I've been on the fisheries work group as the co-chair now for over 5 years, and I can actually pleasingly say this is the first time we've actually had an issue we all agree on. So as unfortunate as this is, it's somewhat of a relief that everybody's leaving, all agreeing that we're going in the right direction, so I certainly appreciate that. But I, the only disagreement I would have with anything that's been set up here right now is I don't want to take a defensive position. I'd rather take an offensive position and really strategically approach this and make sure that we address this issue in a way that actually sustains and supports our harvesting industry and our processing industry going forward. So, again, I want to thank everybody for being here, for Nick, for James, for Sue, and for Chris on the phone, and everybody that's listening in on KMXT. This is what we need to do as a work group. This is why we started as a work group, and this is really, really, I think, why we all, a lot of us, ran for office. So thank you. Thank you for being here. I know it's time out of your day. So, Heather, you have some comments, and we'll get to setting the next meeting date.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I echo what others have said. I've been working for this group for 3 years, and it is a pleasure to be working on something that people can come together on. And then this is a perfect example of sort of an emerging strategy for a community that's inclusive of everyone. And it's an enormous pleasure, and it also makes things much easier when you're going to do battle with an external force like clearly we are. So it was a great meeting. Thank you.
Okay. Next is setting the next meeting date and time. And given that we have a couple deadlines looming, one is obviously the meeting coming up, but we also have a lot of the council members and assembly members will be gone. I'd suggest that our next meeting would be on the 28th. And I don't know if there's any meeting conflicts with the borough or the city, but... Okay, but I mean, the 27th, the Monday or Tuesday, either one, but that gives the clerks enough time to publish notices and everything else.
We're talking about the 27th or the 28th?
Mm-hmm.
The 27th will work.
Okay, it's a Monday. Does that work for everybody?
During the day, right?
During the day.
We have a meeting that night.
Right, during the day.
What time?
8:30?
8:30?
No, I prefer 9 o'clock.
Sorry. You prefer 9 o'clock?
I prefer 9 o'clock if sure. Just because of my day job, that gives me a little time to meet with staff and everything. That would be helpful.
Does that work for everybody else? Okay. All right. 9 o'clock it is on the 27th, and I don't know if we need to be in here or we can be downstairs.
Mr. Chair, is this going to be a special meeting then?
Yes.
Okay. And Mr. Chairman, may I? Is this the... The only issue is the review of the letter.
Right.
Okay.
Okay. Any other comments, please? Or in that case, we'll adjourn the meeting. And thank you, KMXT.